Welcome back, everyone. Today we're taking a deep dive into the Nicolas Flisch Foundation in Germany.
A fascinating organization.
Definitely. I mean, we're talking almost two centuries of history here, all starting back in 1827 with an educator and a young boy.
Ah, yes. Gottlieb Friedrich Wagner and that young boy who wanted to learn.
Exactly. It seems like this Wagner really set things in motion for how we think about supporting visually impaired people even today.
Absolutely. I mean, think about it back then. Blindness was often seen as, well, a complete tragedy, a dead end.
Right, a reason to be pitied.
Yeah. But Wagner saw an opportunity. He realized these weren't just isolated cases. It was the societal issue that needed a real solution.
So instead of just offering charity, he wanted to create lasting change.
Exactly. And he did. But what's really remarkable is that he was able to get support from some pretty influential people.
You're talking about Tsar Nicholas's daughter, right? Olga Nikolajewna.
Her. Can you imagine the impact of a Tsar's daughter championing this cause in the mid-1800s?
That's huge. To go from being ignored to having someone with that much influence on your side.
Exactly. And that's how Nicolas Flisch for Blind Kinder was born, named in honor of her father, no less.
1856, that's the official start date, right? With royal backing and all?
It was, although I'm guessing even with powerful friends, running an organization is never easy, especially in those days.
So what happened? Did things go smoothly at first?
Well, let's just say Wagner was a visionary, not so much a manager. He had the passion, but maybe not the organizational skills.
Ah, the classic heart in the right place, head in the clouds scenario.
You could say that.
Yeah.
Luckily, in 1858, Christian Sackmann stepped in to lead, and he brought a new perspective with him.
I read that he was all about practical skills. What did that look like back then?
Think basket weaving, chair caning, even printing. Sackmann understood that for people to be truly independent, they needed skills that could lead to employment.
Wow. That's incredibly forward-thinking for the mid-19th century. It seems like he really set the stage for how we view inclusion today.
Absolutely. And it wasn't just him. Theodore Decker, one of his successors, continued to build upon those foundations in the early 1900s.
That's when they moved to the Krerwald facility, right?
The very same. Mm-hmm. It's still their main hub today. They needed more space, which tells you how much the demand for their services was growing.
Makes sense. We often think of history in these broad strokes, but you're right, this wasn't just about one man's vision. It was about filling a real need in society.
Exactly. And Nicolas Flisch was doing that in a way that was constantly evolving. Even back then, they understood the importance of adapting to the changing times.
So true. But I think what's fascinating is that this organization has managed to thrive for so long. It's not just a relic of the past. It's still going strong in the 21st century.
It really is remarkable. And I think a lot of that has to do with these seven guiding principles they operate on.
Right. Those principles. I was curious about those. It's easy to throw words on a website, but how do they actually play out in the day-to-day work of such a large organization? They really stuck out to me. I mean, it's one thing to talk about individual well-being or lifelong learning as abstract ideas.
Sure.
But how do they actually make those things a reality for the people they work with? That's what I'm really curious about.
Right. Well, let's take that lifelong learning principle, for example.
Okay.
It's not just about, say, offering a bunch of courses for visually impaired people to take.
I see.
Nicolas Flisch actually invests a lot and making sure their own staff are constantly learning, too.
Interesting. So it's not just about the clients. It's about the whole organization embracing that idea.
Exactly. They even have their own academy dedicated to professional development for their staff.
Wow. Their own academy. That's impressive. I mean, that shows real commitment.
Oh, absolutely. And it speaks to their dedication to quality. Which reminds me, they're also really interesting in how they handle funding.
Oh, how so?
Well, they do rely on public funding, of course.
Yeah, makes sense.
But they're not afraid to go above and beyond that.
Mm-hmm.
They actively fundraise and advocate for more support because they don't want to be limited by just the bare minimum.
Yeah. I see. So it's about having the freedom to do more, to be more innovative.
Exactly. And that ties directly back to their commitment to offering the highest quality of work possible, which is another one of their guiding principles.
Right. High quality of work. It's a nice phrase, but what does that actually look like across such a diverse organization?
Well, it definitely varies depending on what we're talking about. There's specialized schools, for example. They measure quality in academic achievement, of course.
Makes sense.
But also in how well those students are prepared for life beyond school.
Ah, the social and personal aspects.
Exactly. And then you look at their vocational training programs, where success is measured by, you know, job placement rates, how well those graduates are able to build careers and be independent.
So it's about tailoring those metrics to each specific area of their work.
Precisely. And we can't forget about their assistive technology programs.
Oh, right. That must be such a constantly evolving field to work in.
It really is. They're not just providing access to the latest devices, but also really focusing on training and support so people can actually use those tools effectively.
It's one thing to have the technology, but it's another thing entirely to know how to use it to its full potential.
Absolutely. In fact, they were one of the first organizations to adopt a really revolutionary tactile graphics printer. It allows them to create Braille textbooks and tactile maps, like on demand.
Wow.
It's been huge, especially for students.
That's incredible. It seems like they're always looking for those cutting edge solutions.
Absolutely. And that brings us to their new school building project, which is another perfect example of their forward thinking approach.
Right. The new facility for the Betty Hirsch Schultz Centrum. I was wondering about that. What makes it so special?
Well, it's not just about having a newer, bigger space, though that's important too, of course. It's really about creating a truly 21st century learning environment that's specifically designed for visually impaired students.
So they're really thinking about accessibility and integrating technology right from the start.
Exactly. They're not just trying to keep up with the times. They're trying to stay ahead of the curve, which is really admirable.
It is. But, you know, for as impressive as all of this is, it's important to remember that behind all the programs and the buildings and the technology, there are real people whose lives are being directly impacted.
Absolutely.
I mean, we've talked a lot about the organizational side of things, but I'd love to hear more about those personal stories.
Yeah, for sure. There were definitely a few that really stood out to me while I was reading through the materials for this deep dive.
Oh, really? What were some of the things that resonated with you?
Well, there was this one quote from a mother. She was talking about how a counselor at Nichols Flage really helped her family understand what was going on with her child.
Oh, that's so important. I mean, it's one thing to get a diagnosis from a doctor, but it's another thing entirely to actually process what that means for your family.
Exactly. And she was saying how the counselor, like, actually took the time to explain all the technical stuff in a way that made sense and, you know, just really listened to her fears and anxieties.
That human connection can make all the difference.
It really can. And it's not just about the initial diagnosis either, you know. There's another story. This one was from a father, and he was talking about how Nicholas Flage had helped his daughter, who has a severe visual impairment, to become much more independent.
Oh, that's wonderful. What kind of support did they provide?
Well, it sounds like she was able to get the training and resources she needed to, you know, just live her life on her own terms.
That's amazing to see your child thrive like that, especially when they're facing those kinds of challenges. That must be such a gift.
It must be. And it really speaks to the holistic approach that Nicholas Flage takes. You know, they're not just focused on one aspect of a person's life. They're looking at the whole picture.
Right. It's about empowering people to reach their full potential, whatever that might look like for them.
Exactly. And in doing so, they're not just changing the lives of individuals with visual impairments. They're changing families and communities as well.
It's incredible to think how much progress has been made since Nicholas Flage was founded, especially with all the advancements in technology. I mean, we take things like screen readers for granted, but those tools have completely revolutionized what's possible for visually impaired people.
Oh, absolutely. And we're only just scratching the surface, really. I mean, think about the potential of artificial intelligence and all the other emerging technologies out there.
It's an exciting time to be alive, that's for sure. But of course, with every new technology come new challenges.
Very true. Like, how do we ensure that everyone has equal access to these tools? And what about privacy concerns? Those are big questions that we need to be thinking about carefully.
Right. And we can't forget about the social barriers that still exist. Technology can only take us so far, you know? We also need to be working to change attitudes and perceptions.
Absolutely. It's about creating a world where everyone feels valued and respected, regardless of their visual ability.
Well said. So as we wrap up this deep dive into Nicholas Flage, I'm left wondering, what can our listeners do to be a part of this change? How can they contribute to a more inclusive world?
That's a great question. I think it starts with awareness. you know, educating ourselves and others about the challenges that visually impaired people face, but also celebrating their achievements and contributions.
Right. It's about recognizing that diversity is a strength, not a weakness.
And it's about action, too. Supporting organizations like Nicholas Flage, advocating for accessible design in our communities, and just being more mindful of the language we use and the assumptions we make.
Those are all great suggestions. It's about taking those small, everyday actions that can collectively make a big difference.
Absolutely. It's about recognizing that we all have a role to play in creating a more inclusive and equitable world for everyone.
Couldn't agree more. Well, on that note, I want to thank you so much for joining me on this fascinating deep dive into Nicholas Flage. It's been a pleasure learning alongside you today.
It's been my pleasure as well. It's always inspiring to see organizations like this making a real difference in the world.
To our listeners, thank you for tuning in. We hope you'll join us next time for another deep dive into a topic that matters. Until then, be well, everyone.